As long as he is captivated by his false manifestation, by this false manifestation, he has to continue transmigrating from one body to another. Due to his desire to lord it over material nature, he is put into such undesirable circumstances. Under the influence of material desire, the entity is born sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a man, sometimes as a beast, as a bird, as a worm, as an aquatic, as a saintly man, as a bug. This is going on. And in all cases, the living entity thinks himself to be the master of his circumstances, yet he is under the influence of material nature. How he is put into such different bodies is explained here. It is due to association with the different modes of nature. One has to rise, therefore, above the three material modes and become situated in a transcendental position. That is called Krishna consciousness. Unless one is situated in Krishna consciousness, his material consciousness will oblige him to transfer from one body to another because he has material desires since time immemorial. But he has to change that conception. That change can be affected only by hearing from authoritative sources. The best example is here. Arjuna is hearing the science of God from Krishna. The living entity, if he submits to this hearing process, will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature. And gradually and proportionately, as he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. In a Vedic mantra, it is said that he becomes learned in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He proportionately relishes his eternal blissful life. Om Gyana Timrandasya Dhananjana Shlakya Chaksha Omni Tangina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitangina Bhutale Swami Pukadamaya Dhanasudhikam. The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. Verse number, Madhu Yanti Deva Rata Devan. Beat me to it. Yanti Deva Rata Devan, Pitrin Yanti Priti Rataha Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja. Yanti Majachi Nupiman. Those who were, anyway, I was going to look for the actual verse number, but I'm quoting a verse. Those who worship the demigods, they take birth among demigods. Those who worship the Pittas, the ancestors, take birth among the Pittas. Those who worship ghosts and spirits take birth amongst such beings. For those who worship me, Krishna is speaking, attain my eternal abode. This is kind of talking about a similar subject to this. This is saying that living entities, they're doing whatever they'd like to do, and they're enjoying the three modes of material nature. Enjoying is not probably the most accurate way of saying it, but okay. And this is due to their association with this material nature, and thus they're experiencing good and evil in different forms of life. So we have this 8,400,000 species of life, and I think in the Bhagavatam, or at least Prabhupada somehow gets it in there, it breaks it down. Oh, is that Chaitanya Charitamrita? Lord Chaitanya breaks it down. Anyway, they break it down. 400,000 species of human beings, so many of birds, so many of trees and plants, and they kind of break it down again. But what it essentially breaks down to in the ultimate principle is the three modes of material nature in different combinations. Now, it is not exactly goodness, passion, and ignorance, because if you do a 3 × 3 × 3 × 3 multiplication, you do not get 8,400,000 species. Trust me, I've done it many different ways. It's generally breaking them down. So you have 400,000 species of even human life, which, as far as I know, includes the demigods and these various more intellectually advanced, materially advanced species. And, you know, goodness, passion, ignorance, goodness, passion, like this, various combinations are made. Like you have blue, yellow, and red, or in lights you have blue, red, and green. These are the primary colors, and you mix and you mix and you make all the different colours of life. So this is how this whole universe is populated, by all the different species with a different karmic circumstance in a different mode of material nature. Some are more sattvic, more mode of goodness. Some are more rajas, mode of passion. Some are more tamasic, mode of ignorance. And looking at them, you can see how this makes their life. Because the advantage of ignorance is bliss, is that you can suffer like anything, but you can survive it because you can cover your mind. And this is usually the case of the animals. It's a dog-eat-dog world out there, we say, you know, like, all's fair in the animal kingdom, you know, there's no rules there, really. You know, you see birds, they don't just eat, they twitch like crazy, looking to see if something's going to kill them. If you turn your head away for a moment, you're dead. This is what it's like to be an animal. So to experience that existence, you have to have a lot of ignorance to really just survive. Otherwise, you know, you're going to need like animal psychotherapists at every single tree trunk. You know, it'd be too crazy. So they're in this mode of ignorance. And ignorance is symptomized by, well, besides the fact of ignorance being not very intelligent, it starts in misery and the result is also misery. So this is the nature that they're experiencing. Everything they do results in misery. And we can see this in material life too. One, later on you get through, the next chapter. The three modes of material nature. So obviously in the Bhagavad Gita it deals a lot with the three modes of material nature. And it sounds like, yeah, I've heard it all before, reincarnation, modes of material nature, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But these things are actually things you have to apply, not just know for a Bhakti Shastri quiz or, you know, whatever you have, or to impress your friends. These things are very important. And the very simplistic method of 1 + 1 is still used in later, larger equations. So if you don't master the three modes of material nature, it's going to be really difficult because it gets more complicated. And this stuff is really, really, really useful in life. It really helps you get through, like, see things as they are. And it helps you. I mean, obviously, an obvious example is when someone gets angry, you don't hold it against them for the rest of their life. You realize that they associated with the mode of passion, which is usually pleasurable when it begins, but comes to an end. Although anger could be technically a mode of ignorance. But that's the point. You know, you have to be able to calculate things. You know, where is it? What was the result of it? You know, what started it? So you look at your whole young life of drugs and sex, drugs and rock and roll, and some people are like, oh, it was Maya and it was horrible and blah, 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 blah. But some are like, hey, it was great. I mean, I haven't had much experience with these things, but I know many people say, it's great, or wow, it was great, but it isn't anymore. Or it's, you know, I haven't got anything to show for it. You play video. I mean, I know I used to play video games when I was young. Occasionally, kind of jump on one for a little bit of like nulling myself. It's a little bit better than, you know, drinking alcohol, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, you could defeat the biggest boss guy or whatever you have, and the ultimate nemesis, and then you come out. Some of these guys do it until they're 30, 40, still do it, you know. But at the end, you don't get a diploma. You know, you got all these credentials within the game, but you don't have a diploma, you don't have any skill sets that help you get a job. It's not really, you know, maybe if you want to join the military, you might have a bit more of a sharper aim with a machine gun, but it's not really kind of creating anything good. So it's enjoyable at first, it's misery in the end. So that's the mode of passion. But I think even with that, you get to a certain point where it's not even funny anymore. You know, like sometimes like you're watching the TV and there's nothing on, but you got nothing better to do, so you just keep flicking the channels. You're miserable and all you're making is more misery, but you just have no way out of it. And then you get to the mode of ignorance. You know, naturally, the mode of passion starts to bring you down to the mode of ignorance. And then you're in trouble because that's really gloggy, you know. That's really slows you down. You become really super pessimistic. You just hate on everything in life. It's good to have a little bit of realism, You know, that's more mode of goodness, where you see the troubles of the world and you avoid them. But when you just see everything as a problem and a problem with no solution, this is the mode of ignorance. This is when you kind of just stake yourself into the ground and you're just done. Nothing is good. And then you really have about one option, and that's probably intoxication, and that just makes it worse. Because once the trips and the highs fade out, when your body adjusts to it, then you've got massive health complications, massive mind complications, worse than before, and you're just sitting in a horrible mess. And this is what people do, and this is how a lot of people have ruined their lives, or at least ruined a large proportion of their lives, or some small proportion. So we have to learn. This is mode of goodness. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult. Sometimes you actually have to read stuff. And you have to get up in the morning, you know. There's nothing worse than battling an alarm clock at God knows what time. I ask people why I don't go to Mongoladi. It's because they have to battle an alarm clock. And because they stayed up all the night before. But really, it's difficult. There is difficulty there. But from mode of goodness, from the initial endeavor, comes positive results. Once you do it, once you regulate yourself, then it's boom. I don't know if you've had that experience where you get up the same day for work or for sadhana or whatever it is, and you start waking up 10 minutes before your alarm clock, and you're like, I don't want to do that, and you try to like sleep until your alarm clock because you want that little bit of extra rest. But your body just like becomes regulated. It thrives on regulation. The body is made, the whole being is made to be in the mode of goodness, if it can be. Of course, you can argue psychophysical nature, not everyone is. But my point is that it becomes easier. You become better at it. And then, I mean, also, you know, this philosophy, when you get dumped on you, especially you're on the street and you just jump the whole philosophy on someone and they just walk away confused and think, wow, I would really like to become a Hare Krishna, but it's just way too much. But, you know, like, you indoctrinate yourself into this philosophy, and it's like a real big mouthful. But once you get it down, then your life is really, really... it should have better quality, really. If it's not, then you're probably not applying it properly, because it should give you a better life. This is what mode of goodness stuff does. It gives you disciplines that make your life better. And if it's not making your life better, then you're probably approaching it in the mode of passion also. You know, you go in there for the laddus and the burfis and the halva, and then you're out of it for the rest. This should increase the quality of your life, and if it doesn't, then you are not doing it properly. This is what mode of goodness does. And this is, you know, ask any person who does yoga, you know, ask them the first day and they're going to be like, oh my God, what a horrible experience. You know, my back was hurting, my leg was out, and I'm trying to like stretch and bend like a silly person, this and that. And then you see these people who do yoga like full on, and they're just, you know, breathing and doing all this stuff, and they're like a robot, and, you know, and they're probably, you know, their health's better, and if those who are concerned about their body, you know, they look better, you know, they've got all this gunk out of their system. And yeah, I mean, all these practices in the mode of goodness, they take some push. You know, anything good needs a little bit of push. You want to be a good musician, you got to practice your scales. You know, some are naturally gifted, but most people, even the naturally gifted, usually have to practice their scales. You want to ride a bike, you got to fall over a few times, or you got to endeavor with the training wheels. You have to go through this stuff. This is what mode of goodness is. It's pushing to get it done. And then it's not just happiness and distress. Mode of ignorance, well, it's kind of related, obviously, because everything is related in these modes. Mode of ignorance is destruction. It destroys you. It destroys everything around you. Mode of passion is creation. It creates things, but things ultimately become destroyed. So it does have the tendency to lead towards destruction if you don't elevate yourself from it. Mode of goodness is maintenance. I always tell people, maintenance is, you know, sustaining things. So you sustain things. You know, a mode of goodness relationship, you work through. A mode of passion, you know, you just deal with a person until there's nothing new about them, and then you find a new one. You know, okay, heard this story before. Oh, you know, I'm sick of seeing this person in my house every day. Let's go find the next pretty born person who walks by. You know, this is mode of passion. And it doesn't ultimately create happiness in the longer sense. What it eventually will do is create ignorance, where you're just like, I hate this person already, but I'm going to go through with this and I'm going to hate it. And then I'm going to dump them for someone else and go find someone else I'm going to hate. And I really just don't like people anymore. And they probably don't like me, and I don't really care. So this is, yeah, you eventually get to that point. Mode of goodness, it's like, okay, this person's got some things that need to work out, but so do I. You know, it doesn't mean you have to like take on, you know, a crazy tyrant, or, you know, like, you know, pick some criminal and take him into your house, or, you know, try to be best friends with him. You got to be realistic, because that's also jumping the gun. That's a little bit in the mode of passion or mode of ignorance or whatever. You have to be intelligent, but you have to sustain things. You have to be patient. And then eventually, what I mean, in relationships, friends or whatever else, or lovers or whatever, if you sustain a relationship in the mode of goodness, you actually develop a very deep relationship. And think about it, those friends, if they still stick around, those friends you have for the longest time are really true friends, you know, who give you the kidney or whatever you need later in life, bail you out of a bad situation. Usually it can be family. But if you don't sustain it and work on it and keep it going, there's plenty of people I know who have wonderful families, and there's plenty of people I know who have horrible families. I don't want to talk to anybody, because they all just got fed up with each other, you know. No one gave each other a chance, or they were all just mad, you know. They're all seeking sense gratification without really being considerate. This is really like mode of ignorance, mode of passion stuff. Selfishness and greed and all these horrible things come up. If, you know, everyone was a little bit more patient, a little bit more tolerant, then you might have a few more friends on your Facebook, you know, or at least a few more real friends. You might have a few more acquaintances out there in the world who will help you out. And we might have, you know, you might smile a little bit more when you're around people. You know, you might actually have some people in your life that mean something. This is the mode of goodness. And what I often say is, we say the spiritual platform is shuddha sattva. And I think that makes very good sense, because if goodness sustains, then pure goodness is permanent sustenance. It's permanently sustained, which means it's eternal. Things that are eternal are always, you know, it's purified goodness. When you purify it, you have something that is perfect and it doesn't run down. You know, maintenance for us is like, you know, patching stuff up and keeping it going and tuning the car and stuff. But imagine if you have a car that eventually, maybe you have to tune it every day, but it just never breaks down. Imagine that. You'd be like, you'd tune that every day. I'd check the oil in a car like that. If someone told me, you just check the oil every day of this car and it'll never break down, and hey, it's a, you know, Mercedes Benz or whatever, you know, something really nice, I'd do that. So the spiritual world, it's like that. They actually, you know, they're still, they're working on relationships and they're building relationships, and everything is very dynamic. But they're always endeavoring. They're always doing something. They don't lose drive. It's only here that you lose drive. I mean, you have helpless collapses of rasa and all these wonderful things in the spiritual descriptions of Goloka Vrindavan, etc. But you have constant motion. It hasn't just stopped. There's not this complete stillness of some kind of impersonal liberation. It's going on. You're pushing and you're moving, but you're not pushing too hard, you know what I mean? Krishna's friends, they play fight, but they don't go up and punch each other in the face, you know? They're not aggressive like that. There's play fight, you know what I mean? But there's not fight. Or, you know, Krishna, sometimes he beats up a few demons, but that's something else. But, yeah, I mean, there's all these things going on, but people are respectful of each other. And that's what we had a whole discussion on that one Sunday feast. Was it last Sunday or the one before? Sunday feast before. And I gave a talk on rasa theory. And the first rasa is shantya rasa. Peace, respect. Respect people. This is where all your relationships will begin. And this is what is, in different descriptions that the acharyas give of the spiritual world, some say there are beings that have shantya rasa. And others say, no, everyone is more advanced than that. But that still means that they have respect as a basis of other relationships. You have to have that respect. You have to have that mode of goodness. If you don't, Bhutani anti bhuteja, you take birth amongst all sorts of mad beings. If you act like an idiot, you will be given a birth that is suitable. And that is Krishna's mercy. Because that is what you desire. If you desire to associate with the mode of ignorance, you will get a birth in the mode of ignorance. And you can't blame anyone, because that is what you endeavored for. If you endeavor to enjoy like cats and dogs, better to be cats and dogs. And I know plenty of people I've talked to who actually think this is kind of cool. Now, you get to become a dog in the street. Oh, your religion's a load of junk. Oh, you know, you get to have sexual relations with whoever you want. Oh, I love this. Oh, I want to become a dog. You know, this is what people have on their mind, and this is what they end up getting. It's better to be one of these animals. They have it easier for these things. They're geared towards these gross mentalities. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Animals do it better than we do. Check it. They have more babies. They do more of it, baby making. Bears sleep for like months on end. Elephants are eating whole forests. They're up there, the panda bears chewing down bamboo. And you know, defending, we got like, you know, okay, we got to build guns. Tigers got claws and junk, you know what I mean? We got to get spears, we got to like fashion things. We got to like compensate. You know, an elephant comes in and he just rips someone in half. These guys, they're not worried. They're the kings of the jungles and the water holes and all that. So they have all these things better than we do. So that means we shouldn't be endeavoring to advance in these things unless we want to become animals. An animalistic society is about eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Humans have to do it to some extent. And some have to do some things more than other people do, but that is not the goal of our life. Our goal is therefore self-realization. That is something humans can do that animals can't. You can argue that a dolphin is more intelligent than a human, according to some scientific studies, but they don't really have the capacity to read Bhagavatam or recite it in aquatic language. You know what I mean? Like, it's only the human species of life that has this, so this is our purpose. It's our purpose to raise to the mode of goodness, and then from there to go to purified goodness. And this shouldn't just be a horrible endeavor of pain and suffering. It should have a little bit of a kick at the beginning that you have to work on, but it should level out to be very, very wonderful. And if it's not, then you're not practicing the mode of goodness, or you just have a lot of baggage that you've got to work off. And at least you can be assured, the person in the mode of goodness, he's happy. Why is he happy? Because he knows in his next birth he's not going to be degraded. He knows in his next birth he's going to have an advanced birth. He knows that he's going to have a good birth. So he is therefore content. Other people, they don't have that reassurance. If you work towards a mode of goodness, the worst you can say is like, okay, you still have some baggage from your previous lives. You might have to drop down a little bit, but you're at least working, you know, you're building up what you've got at the worst. If not, you're getting something way better. So there's no loss or diminution, it says, in this path. There's none of these things, because whatever you work for, you'll get. We will stop for questions and comments. That was half an hour of speaking. I have a little timer. Questions, comments, anything brewing as of now? Madhu Gopa. Oh, he quotes it a lot. Yeah, I mean, it seems like very familiar, you know what I mean? This is due to the associate to his... Is that what's going on there? Can I look at Sanskrit so I know what I'm talking about? Yeah. This is due to the association with the material nature, thus he meets with good and evil among various species. Yeah, I mean, he's pointing out this is what sustains birth and death. That's what Prabhupada's saying in the purport, actually. This is what sustains your birth and death. This is what you have to actually get out of if you want to get out of samsara. Associating with these lower modes. And he also points out that, you know, due to the desire to lord it over material nature, he's put into such undesirable circumstances. I always talk about that. We are here, this is the original sin, if you want to use biblical terms for the Hare Krishnas. We are here because we want to be the supreme controller and the supreme enjoyer. And I say it in like every class because you have to remind yourself. When you're not enjoying, you freak out. When you're not in control, you freak out because this is why you're here. If you have faith and you're detached, when that happens, you're okay. You know, stuff doesn't always go your way. Some big things in life don't always go your way. And you see this over and over again. People lose jobs and husbands and wives and crazy mad stuff is going on now. And you've got to be detached, because if you think that this world is made for my enjoyment and my control, guess what, buddy? It's not going to happen. And you're going to really struggle with this place, and it's going to give you hell. And every single corner has got a new surprise, and you're going to be on the ground more than you're up, because this is not what this world is made for. I'm not saying that the world is made to give you hell and horror, which it's arguably is. But, you know, if you have the mentality of a supreme controller, a supreme enjoyer, it will. It will give you suffering from start to finish, because you will never really achieve that. You will achieve a minute amount of control and a minute amount of enjoyment. But that is God's realm, and you should leave it to him. He does a lot better job, and he's blue. So, he's got a few things going for him. That wasn't a question, but I just felt I missed that. Anything else? Something else? I like stuff from different boxes. He says he very sarcastically said they take a bath in the Viraja River and are purified. It's the causal Karana ocean is sometimes called the Viraja River, which is spiritual but not effulgent. It's a dark, not effulgent like the Brahmajyoti. It's in the causal ocean, which is in the Mahatattva, the material world, but it's spiritual because that's where Mahavishnu lies. But yeah, go on. Is that what you're... Sure. Maybe. Yeah. I would say bliss would be the major difference, because I would say void is void of everything. And Brahmajyoti is void of experience. It's considered a very blissful state, though. It's just kind of like you're just on complete dope, I would say. But, I mean, the Shankara says the closest experience is like deep, deep sleep. And I think Buddhists will probably try to use the same example. But, yeah, it's... I don't know... of many descriptions of the Buddhist perfection in our Shastra, to be honest. But that is the only thing I could really see different, is that because Brahman is a higher grade of spiritual, there would be seemingly a better state in feeling. But ultimately, the two of them are not eternal, although spiritual, because the soul needs activity. And without it, it gets frustrated and it leaves. And it's also explained that one of the most horribly, painful things that the soul can endure is falling from spiritual platforms. So, yeah, it's kind of like a real long delay in your whole existence, and then a very difficult experience to fall from that back to the material realm, which is... not better, but has variety in comparison. So it's kind of like it's like a lose-lose situation in the longer run. Yeah, I mean, it's to free yourself from samsara. So yeah, I mean, yeah, but it's arguably not eternal. It's very, it could deep, long sleep. Yeah, I don't know if it's technically ignorance, but it's definitely not shuddhasattva. But yeah, I mean, you see, this is an interesting thing that people do. Material relationships equals suffering. Therefore, no relationships equals no suffering. But we say no. We say material relationships equal suffering. Therefore, spiritual relationships equal no suffering. It's a very subtle difference. And it's just so subtle, a lot of people miss it. And that's why these religions are very popular. If you call them religions. Because they promise freedom from suffering. That's actually, Buddha was really just saying, I can teach you what is suffering and how to get out of it. He made no comment of what's after that. It was his disciples who then speculated, not in an offensive way, but did honestly speculate what the realm was. Because he didn't say anything about it. But he did tell us what suffering is, and he was... They have a great doctrine of, you know, analysing suffering, and we agree with a lot of it in our philosophy, because that was what they were figuring out. Okay, this world is suffering. it's obvious if you think about it for long enough, but yeah, it's true, you know. It's not really the greatest place to be, unless you're in shuddhasattva. Buddhism Kijin. We're doing Sadarshana course, which is the 6 classical Indian philosophies. Karma Mimamsa, Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Vedanta, we're in there as well. Yoga. And then we also study Buddhism and Jainism, because they're in the scriptures as oppositions. all of the 6 darshanas, they all agree that they're opposed, philosophically speaking, to the Buddhists and Jainists and the Charvakas, which are these materialists. Charvakas are the ones that they beg, borrow, steal, but just get key. You know, do whatever you want and just make sure you enjoy, because after death there's nothing. And that's been going on since forever. And Krishna even addresses the Charvakas in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, you know, even if you think that death is permanent, then what matters? Why does it matter if you kill everyone in the battle? Because they're going to die anyway and be null forever. So he addresses, because that doctrine was there, you know. It's like, if you're really kind of strange enough to believe in the materialistic doctrine of the Charvakas, then there's also no point, you know. You're going to die anyway, so what's the point? Because as I say, just enjoy as much as possible, because life is now and then there's death. But that is also philosophically retarded, because what is your enjoyment going to mean at death? What is your whole existence going to mean at death? The whole philosophy is horrible. It's like joy now, and then you just get to watch yourself slowly and surely die, and then just knowing that's coming for you, and there's nothing. It's like, why? What's the point of life? And that's why the Greek philosophies, you have these Stoics, and they're really good, because they're just like, they're like, a true Stoic is known by his fearlessness to commit suicide. And they're not like, you know, sad, sad people. They're just like, I know what this world is about. Watch me, you know. Because to them, it's all the same. You know, that's the best thing you can get out of it, is someone who's smart enough to kill themselves. But that's them. Anyway, I just kind of got a little lost in the Charvaka philosophy, because they're fun. And there's another philosopher. There's another really great philosopher. I forget the name, but they're like, they believe in reincarnation, but it's predestined. There's no karma. There's just predestiny. So you can just do whatever you want. That's a more enjoyable philosophy, because you can basically enjoy yourself with no consequence, and then come back, but. Funnily enough, these people perform great austerities, and we're trying to figure out why, because there's nothing in their philosophy. And naturally, they're rejected by all of society, because they just create chaos. But anyway, this is all the different doctrines. But yeah, that's ultimately the problem, is we're trying to be the supreme controllers and supreme enjoyers, and Even they will be frustrated with their great philosophy. Anything else? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki.